This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place, whether you're in the mood for a celebration of chamber music at venues across the city, a chance to belt out some great notes in a vocal competition, or celebrate the work of an acclaimed New Orleans artist. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Venues across the city will be filled with music as the 4th Annual Birdfoot Chamber Music Festival kicks off a 10-day celebration. The festival offers a musical feast for lovers of classical music, including open rehearsals and a poetry and spoken word event marking the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. Joining us now is Birdfoot's Artistic Director, Jenna Sherry, and spoken word artist, Catalyst Alcindor. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations as you enter your 4th celebration. Birdfoot is fast growing legs in this community. What are your thoughts about the success of this young music festival?
You know, the moment I came back in town, I could feel the buzz starting. There's more excitement and energy around the festival than there has been any other year, and I think I attribute this to the incredible support of the community and of so many local sort of businesses and organizations who enjoy and value what we're doing and the team of people we have working to make it happen. It's really sort of grown from the inside.
There is a lot on tap. Let's begin with Waterlines as you mark the approaching 10th anniversary of the 2005 storm that crippled New Orleans. How do you blend chamber music with spoken word and poetry in this look at Hurricane Katrina a decade later?
This is a collaboration I'm really, really excited about. I put together a program of music that is sort of inspired by water. And what I like about this is that our relationship with water, I think particularly New Orleans, is so complex. You know, water can be this absolutely powerful, destructive force that can drown and can kill. But we also talk about water as cleansing and purifying. And I liked sort of the double sense of that. I wanted to sort of ask the questions about where are we now, 10 years later, and what do we as musicians and artists have to contribute to this conversation, and what conversations can we start? There's music by Debussy. Debussy's La Mer, arranged for piano trio, which is, you know, an enormous orchestral piece brought down into this tiny ensemble. And we're also playing music by Thomas Addis, a piece called Arcadiana, which has a lot of water references in it. The Arcadiana is made up of 7 short movements. I've been working with Catalyst to figure out how his work fits in with that. So he will do some of his work and we'll play some of our music. We'll also be collaborating. The musicians will be improvising with him, and all of this will come together during the festival.
Catalyst, can you give us a little bit of the experience of your spoken word?
Sure. I'll give you a snippet of a piece that I created called Greater Than Hurricanes. Katrina. We still keep track of the amount of caskets you left open that unfateful day since you landed at our doorstep. We've been rebuilding ever since, and much, much like our caskets, we now stand upright. While aiming for our throats, you broke open our rib cage. It's been swinging ever since. You spun like a punch drunk on a Friday night looking for a way out, blasting backhandedly your way through downtown the size of your wingspan, clapped like a pelican with an upright bass. This is not a song we choose to remember. Blues has always been a part of our heritage, but we ain't heard a tune like this since Betsy. Down in New Orleans, we all know, hearts break like levees. Being here, I've experienced a number of stories that'll never, ever leave my side, so I've decided to start creating and writing them down just so I could go and see the rest of the world and tell other people about this.
How did your work come to the attention of the Birdfoot Festival?
I was doing a show with the National Performance Network about 2 years ago. Apparently Jenna saw one of my pieces.
I heard more than just beautiful words and poetry. I heard something coming through, a rhythm, a communicative power that spoke to me. And I remember thinking, wow, I would love to get to know this man, and I would love to see what we could learn from each other.
She decided to come and see me via Facebook. I think she was a little bit nervous when she approached me.
Because I thought, like, what can I say that will make him interested in wanting to work with us, you know?
But in actuality, this is something that I've been dreaming about doing for a very long time. And I'm very happy and thrilled to be a part of this.
What was your Katrina experience?
We were in the middle of the hurricane while we were going through it, and we ended up getting to Baton Rouge safe and secure. But even in Baton Rouge, our story wasn't much different. It was a lot of rain, a lot of wind, a lot of flooding. Tensions were high, of course. Food was scarce. Money was scarce. This was my senior year in high school. In the back of my mind, I was like, am I going to see my friends again? Am I going to see the rest of my teachers? What's going to happen? It was kind of odd. We had become this alien in our own homeland. It kind of became like a post-apocalyptic type of thing. But of course, we got through unscathed and unharmed, and we got back to our hometown. It was pretty devastating, but life-building nonetheless.
What else will be performed at this unique festival?
We have actually 11 concerts and events at venues all over the city. And these include Cafe Istanbul, the CAC, Basin Street Station, Dixon Hall, the Ashe Cultural Center, as well as a special dinner event called a musical feast, which is happening with Chef Kristen Essig of Mobar at the top of Jones Walker in their beautiful dining room. So we have events all over the place. One thing I'm particularly excited about is that we're working with UNO faculty member and composer Yotam Haber. And he is a really fantastic composer who's actually sort of nationally, internationally recognized. And we're so lucky to have him living right here in New Orleans. We're performing a piece of his called Society of the Free and Easy, a title inspired by Benjamin Franklin. In addition to a lot of composers and works that people who are classical music enthusiasts will recognize, you know, Debussy, Ravel, Dohnányi, a Mozart flute quartet. We're playing a lot of music by contemporary composers, and I think as a performer this is so important that as performers we become sort of voices for the music that we think is really real and vibrant and alive and fresh. So we're performing, in addition to music by Yotam Haber, music by Thomas Addis, Kaya Sarriaho, Andrew Norman. All of these are absolutely fantastic composers with really unique voices, and they fit in really well with the more well-known works we're playing.
You have an international host of artists coming to town. Who will we hear?
18 artists, including 4 local musicians. 2 of them are members of the Louisiana Philharmonic, Daniel Lelchuk and Paul Macris. In addition to that, artists representing at least 7 countries. And several of them grew up in different places, so I'm not exactly sure how to count that. We might even be able to extend that list, but that's a lot for 18 musicians. And there will be artists that people will recognize from last year, violist Roger Chase, violinist Chris Tong, pianist Prach Bundeskulchuk, and many others.
Will you be performing?
I'll be performing actually on all 3 of the main concerts. I'm a violinist, yes.
Tell me about Birdfoot Backstage. This is a concert that will be recorded by WWNO.
WWNO came to us and said, hey, we'd really like to do a program that would go into depth about a piece of music that people know and love. So what we're going to do is we're going to take one of the pieces that will be performed on Birdfoot's final concert, Tchaikovsky's really wonderful and energetic Souvenir de Florence, and we're going to take it apart in front of the audience. So the event will be taped live, and we'll take it apart, and we'll talk about it, and we'll demonstrate it, and we'll put it back together, and we'll take questions, and we'll perform a portion of it.
What is your overall goal for the festival?
To break down the barriers between audiences and music and musicians, and make people feel like this is their music, that they can engage with this music and interact with it and absorb it and love it and think about it, regardless of who it's composed by, regardless of when, regardless of their experience, just to help people feel at home with great music.
And I hope that they walk away with the great experience and acknowledgement of what the spirit of the city is.
Jenna Sherry, Birdfoot Festival Artistic Director and spoken word artist and poet, Catalyst Elsendor. Thanks.
Thanks so much for having us.
You're listening to Schubert's Trout Quintet, recorded last year at Birdfoot Festival by Joe Stolarik. The Birdfoot Festival begins tomorrow with an artist residency at the Maidwood Plantation House in Napoleonville. Public concerts and events open in New Orleans May 25th and run through May 30th at venues across the city. More info at birdfootfestival.org. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. As American Idol prepares to end its run, there's a new competition in the works, and this one's in town. The New Orleans Opera Association is launching a youth vocal competition for all Louisiana high school sophomores, juniors, and seniors. And joining me now to talk about this new opportunity is competition director Debbie Hirsch Wood of the New Orleans Opera Association. Welcome.
Thank you.
How did this competition come about?
Well, it was something that I thought about 2 years ago. Music is such an important part in singing of America and the world. And so I said, well, what if we had something for young students that would get them connected with professional singers at a very young age and also give them an opportunity to show us their talent? So I've been working with the New Orleans Opera Association, Tulane, Loyola, NOCA, and it's blossomed.
And you decided to reach out to a younger audience because?
Starting young is very important in this field. The ages of opera singers peak somewhere in their 30s. Kids really want to perform, and I want to give them the opportunity.
Why is this especially important in Louisiana and more specifically New Orleans?
Well, New Orleans is the first city to bring opera to America. We have such a legacy here. The first opera in New Orleans was in 1796. We have a plethora of opera singers that have come through New Orleans. We have Norman Traigle. If you go to the Mahalia Jackson Theater, you'll see a statue there. Recently, we've had Brian Hemel, who received the Beverly Sills Artist Award about a year or two ago, and he's become quite famous. And then, of course, Sarah Jane McMahon has gotten world-renowned accolades, and we want to give that opportunity to more locals.
Who is eligible, and what are you looking for in the auditions?
First, it'll be sophomores, juniors, and senior high school students who are in those years as of October 17th, 2015. And we will be looking for the musicality of the voice, the technical skills, the diction, interpretation, and presentation. The students will be asked to sing 3 songs of standard classical literature. One selection is either in Italian, French, or German, and one selection should be in English. But the fun thing is that one can be a musical.
And do the students get to choose what they sing?
They do.
How will these young students benefit from this opportunity?
Well, not only will they be connected with professionals in the field of opera, but the competition awards are very nice. First place, we have a male category and a female category. The award is $1,000 each. Second place will bring $500 each, one male and one female. The day of the competition, we will have a master class with an opera professional, and the judges that are there will be professionals in the field of opera, and they will also be coaching the finalists and giving them constructive feedback. So it's sort of an interactive competition. We want to promote, provide, encourage, and cultivate young new talent. We're going to open the application process to all Louisiana high school sophomores, juniors, and seniors. We will only choose 35 to participate. From that 35, 10 finalists will be chosen. And from the 10, we will have the 4 winners. So the applicants will have to send in a sample of their singing. They have to sing a cappella or only with a piano. And they will have to fill out an application form and so forth. And then if they're chosen, then that's where their opportunities begin.
If you don't win this year, can you reapply for next year?
We'd love to have the students reapply. We are so excited about this. I don't think the general public realize how many talented vocalists we have in high school. They can sing in a choir, but there's no individual place where they can be showcased except in a group sort of situation. This will definitely showcase someone who loves to sing and has a beautiful or amazing voice to other entities and so forth.
In addition to the $1,000 grand prize, would they have an opportunity to sing with the New Orleans Opera?
We're working on that. They will be part of a lot of the events that we have. I mean, we have opera on tap, master signer events. There's always singing at different events. So there are so many opportunities to sing at the New Orleans Opera. And of course, I'm certain that Tulane's going to want to have them go over there, and Loyola and Anoka as well. So it's a big door that opens.
Youth Vocal Competition Director Debbie Hirschwood of the New Orleans Opera Association, thanks.
You're so welcome.
You can get application information for the Youth Vocal Competition by emailing youthvocalcompetition@neworleansopera.org. The submission deadline is September 4th. The competition is set for Saturday, October 17th, in Roussel Hall at Loyola University. It is free and open to the public. Nationally acclaimed visual and performing artist Jeffrey Cook is being remembered next week with an exhibition of his work at the Ashe Powerhouse. The late artist is known for his sculptures and paintings depicting the African-American experience. Ashe Cultural Arts Center Executive Director Carol Bebel is here now to talk about the exhibit Honoring a Native Son. Welcome to the program.
Hello, I'm happy to be back.
The arts community lost Jeffrey Cook in 2009. Tell me, how does Cook's art connect us to the Central City neighborhood where he grew up?
Jeffrey came to appreciate the ancient and the contemporary in Central City, the old and the new. He grew up in Central City and went to the West Coast and came back really steeped in lots of education around the issue of Africanity and ancient Africanity especially. And I think the connection between civil rights, the civil rights movement, Free Southern Theater, he was a visual artist but also a performance artist, and he kind of balanced those two things until he got back home and kind of made the choice to focus on visual art. So this ambidexterity that he had in terms of both being able to be so expert at his visual representation of art as well as in movement and song and theatrical, I think helped him, you know, to kind of understand this tension between the past and the present. So connecting him and Central City to his artwork is really a lot about connecting the past to the present. Central City was a vibrant community at one time and fell on hard times. We were in the process together working on reemerging it. And so he had lived in a cycle of going from something that was shiny and new to something that became old and decayed to something that was going to become shiny and new again. He saw the power in old. He used to teach the kids that. He would have things that they would probably call yucky and dirty. And then he would talk to them about, what else does something being yucky and dirty mean to move them to the point of saying that it was old? And that if something is old, that it has lots of experience, lots of stories. And in fact, one of the pieces of art that's going to be an exhibit is called The Storyteller. And it's a work that has a doll that's on top of a book. And it really is a lot about the whole notion of something that's old has really experienced a lot of story, a lot of narrative. And it carries the spirit of all of that with it, despite what it looks like to someone that just encounters it in its burdened, beat, and old-looking self, that it's full of life.
These are cast-off items, items that people have thrown away that
Absolutely.
He would collect and make
Absolutely.
Something beautiful from it.
Found items. He often did that. There's another piece that he worked on for years. It's called Mr. Debris. That really started out as a piece of work for a performance piece called Voodoo Macbeth, and then evolved over time to essentially being something that kind of emerged out of the storm, a featured piece of artwork that's called Mr. Debris. So whether it was people or things, there was a way in which he essentially gave the regard and the respect to the things and to people that they deserved.
How did you go about selecting pieces for this show?
A group of his colleagues, Ron Bechet and Martin Payton, who are over at Xavier, Margaret Slade Kelly, who's now in Atlanta, Stella Jones here in New Orleans, and Jay Weigel. So it was a group of the work that we could have access to, because Jeffrey's works are all over the country. We weren't going to have a capacity to be able to organize, to be able to bring all of that in. And so we have a lot of the works that he made and wound up staying close to home, you might say. And then Ashe. Ashe has three or four of his works. We're going to have film. We've got some instances where we get a chance to hear from him himself. And then Ron Bechet is, and Martin Payton are concocting and creating an altar space where people are going to be able to bring memories or other symbolics. That's a kind of a Jeffrey thing, and we thought that that was something that he would really appreciate. So there are going to be probably about 20 pieces that are going to be in the show. And we're going to have fun remembering somebody that we all sorely miss.
He had a great teacher and mentor in the legendary John Scott.
Oh, yeah.
Do we see Scott's influences in his work?
When Jeffrey said, my teacher, you knew he was talking about John Scott. So people would come and say, so and so, John Scott. He would say, my teacher? Like he only belonged to him. So there's no way that you could talk about Jeffrey and his work and not talk about that. I know that Basquiat and Romare Bearden were very big influences on some of the styles of the things that he did. And I think some of the kinetic quality of work that John did was an influence in Jeffrey. I don't know if I see it so much in his art. I'm clear that the appreciation for antiquity and Africanity and the zeal to be able to connect that and make commentary present time, I am clear that those are things that were both things that John stood for, and I could see them also in Jeffrey.
What do you imagine Jeffrey Cook would be exploring through his art were he alive today?
Oh, my God. I think he'd be looking at this diversification, gentrification conversation, and he'd be looking at some of the stuff that's happening with the losing of the land, you know, Louisiana's future in terms of the wetlands and all that kind of stuff. And he would definitely be dabbling in this work about valuing Black lives. He would be finding a way to be able to manage to do that and also to remind us that old is not bad. There's great value in being attentive and respectful and connected to the old.
Would he be proud of this exhibit?
I think he would be uncomfortably happy with it because he was often a little bit uncomfortable with spotlight. When it was necessary for him to call attention to himself, he wanted to do that. But when that was over, he was finished with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Carol B. Bell, Executive Director of the Ashe Cultural Arts Center. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having us.
Save the date, Remembering Jeffrey Cook. An exhibition and reception will take place on Wednesday evening, May 27th at the Ashe Powerhouse, 1731 Barone Street, from 5 until 8. And we have something extra in our Lanyap Corner. If you're in the mood for a short road trip this weekend, the Slidell Jazz and Blues Festival gets underway Saturday in Heritage Park in Old Town Slidell from noon until 10 p.m. Artists will include Ronnie Cole, Michael Soulman Baptiste, Third Coast, and more. For additional information, you can check the website, slidelljazzandblues.com. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.